Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is American International Group against Liberty Mutual Insurance.
May it please the Court. Thank you, Your Honor. The first issue I would like to address is a threshold question of whether the undisputed facts in this settlement-only class action establish disqualifying conflicts and inadequacy on the part of the settlement class plaintiffs, whether those same undisputed facts establish a reverse auction, and whether AIG has admitted to colluding with the board of the National Workers' Compensation.
Well, what do you want exactly? Do you want to opt out or what? Do you want to have your own?
No, Your Honor, we do not wish to opt out.
What do you want?
We want this court to reverse the approval of the settlement, find that the settlement class plaintiffs are unqualified, that is, inadequate to represent the class, as is their counsel.
I know. What do you want? What does your client want?
To pursue the class action and to pursue their pool,
what, with
non-pool
a separate
claims.
Subclass or what?
No, Your Honor. The existing action that was being prosecuted before the intervention by Safeco was a putative class action on behalf of all the pool board members. Separately, Liberty had its own claim in the 07 action for what we refer to as non-pool claims, that is, claims in states other than those that were governed by the National Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Pool. If this court finds that the district court committed reversible error and finds that the settlement agreement should be vacated and the settlement class plaintiffs found to be inadequate, then the case will go back. Safeco will prosecute the class action against AIG. Liberty will prosecute.
Why should there be any class action? I've looked at the pool agreement, and the pool agreement says all disputes about who owes what to whom are finally resolved by the board. That doesn't sound like the basis of a class action. That sounds like a basis for just ejecting this case from federal court.
Your Honor, the district court found that that agreement didn't resolve, and appropriately didn't resolve, the private claims between the parties. And there was no attempt.
If there are separate claims between the parties other than those covered by the pool agreement, then it looks to me like there should be individual litigation.
The individual claims are governed by a...
What I don't see, this purported class is a class that tries to replicate the internal workings of the pool agreement. And that's covered by a separate contract which says private dispute resolution, not judicial resolution.
There is actually no mechanism within that contract, Your Honor, to take on the underreporting that was took place here, the fraud, the RICO violations. There is no provision in that contract for those actions, which is why the National Pool Board initially brought this action, was found to have lack of standing, and which is why Safeco prosecuted the putative class action.
I don't understand that either, but perhaps I'd need to ask that question of your opponent. Was that a final decision?
Which a final decision, Your Honor?
The order terminating the suit by the pool manager. Was it a termination or was this a continuation of that suit by interveners?
It was a termination of that suit. There was a separate action brought in April of 2009 by Safeco, given a separate number. And that action was brought in anticipation of a problem with the statute of limitations in the event that the action brought by the National Pool Board was found to be inadequate because of standing issues. And so there is a separate proceeding filed by Safeco. It is not a continuation, Your Honor. I think that if I may address the conflicts, collusion, and reverse auction here, the key document is a...
Look, I still don't understand. I don't understand. You argue that there's a conflict of interest between you and a number of these other companies because of the claims you have against AIG. So, that being so, it would seem to me you want to be carved out from the rest of the class because you have different interests from them.
Your Honor, the very reason that Safeco brought the class action, the putative class action in the first place in 2009, was it believed that
well,
its
maybe
claims,
you could explain the conflict of interest and how you propose to resolve that conflict. We have these companies that have different interests. How are they supposed to be reconciled in a class action?
Your Honor, Safeco wrote a letter to AIG proposing to negotiate and settle only the class claims, leaving AIG to prosecute whatever claims it had against those people that it had sued, which would include four of the settlement class plaintiffs, and it would have left Liberty Mutual.
Well, you have a claim against AIG, too.
For non-pool claims, and it would have left that claim.
And that's not
separate.
Part of the class
action. That's not a part of the class action. So Safeco proposed in October of 2010 to settle only the class claims. If that had happened, if they had negotiated a simple settlement of only the class claims, the conflicts that are now before the court wouldn't exist. Right now, the conflict arises from the fact that the settlement class plaintiffs accepted a proposed settlement, $450 million, that AIG actually says in its letter proposing the settlement of July 29, 2010, was discounted to the class for the value of the releases that the pool board insisted that it give. If there was a discount, and there obviously was because AIG says in that letter, July 29, 2010, which is at Joint Appendix 27, 24 through 32, they say, AIG says, we have discounted the amount we're paying the pool board. That is discounted, the $450 million reflects a discount that we've taken for the value of the releases the pool board is insisting we give. Pool board and the settled class plaintiffs then accepted that proposal, which means that the settlement class plaintiffs have promoted the interests of those companies who were defendants in the separate AIG action, who were getting these releases that were being paid for, in effect, by the class itself. It promoted the interests of that group over the interests of the class. The class...
Well, I don't understand. It seems to me the class contains members who have different interests.
It does indeed.
Well, then how do you get a settlement? I don't understand.
If there had been a settlement that didn't include a settlement of AIG's separate non-class claims against those companies that it had sued, it had sued 18 members of the pool board for breaches of fiduciary duty, and it sued five members of the pool, including four who were members of the pool board, for allegedly underreporting themselves. What AIG and the pool board did...
I thought you want to have a larger settlement because one of the things that holds the settlement down is the value of these releases. That's not a value to you. So it seems to me you want something that the other members of the class don't want, or some other members of the class don't want.
I agree with you, Your Honor. That is why the settlement class should consist of just members of the pool that aren't interested in settling those non-class claims.
That sounds almost completely impractical. This is a dispute within the pool. I can imagine it being resolved by the board under the terms of the agreement, or by a class action, but I don't see how you can have a resolution that has less than all the members of this reinsurance pool. Otherwise, it's not working as a pool anymore.
The settlement, though, has to separate out those actions, those claims by the members of the class against AIG from claims by AIG against others. What happened here was they were combined in a lump sum that was on its face, according to the July 29th letter, discounted for the value of the releases, so that some members of the class were getting a different...
But how do you propose to resolve that? Some members of the class benefit from the release, and you don't. Now, what kind of settlement would reflect this disparity in interest.
A settlement that focuses only on those claims by the class against AIG should be negotiated separately from negotiation of AIG's claims against the pool board members for breach of fiduciary duty and other claims. If you separate them out, and if you have one group that represents only the class's interests against AIG, then they will maximize the interest of that group.
Well, where is the value of the release reflected?
The value of the release right now is reflected in the $450 million. AIG actually says, and I'm quoting, "We believe our $450 million offer reflects an extremely modest discount for the value of the litigation releases that AIG would be giving in connection with the settlement. Your $500 million that the board had demanded reflects no discount for those claims." The letter goes on to say...
Do you contemplate a settlement that will reflect the discount?
To protect the interests of the class.
What?
To protect the interests of the class, the settlement should encompass... The settlement of the class claims should be segregated from settlement of any of AIG's claims that were not brought as a class action against other claimants.
I don't understand. Where is this value of the release reflected?
The value of the release is according to AIG's settlement proposal.
Where do you think the value of the release, if you got your way, where would the value of the release to these other companies, where would that be reflected?
It would be reflected in an increase of the settlement value to the class. They would get more than $450 million.
But then where does the value of the release get deducted?
It only gets resolved when AIG collects money from those that it has sued. If AIG has a separate claim against...
But then there's no release. I don't understand.
Well, they can settle their claims. Certainly AIG and ACE... ACE is a settlement class plaintiff. AIG has sued ACE separate and apart from the class action. Those are big boys. They can settle their own claims and issue releases to each other on any terms and conditions they want. But if you begin to integrate that release with the settlement of the class claims, there's no transparency.
And well, I don't understand. Why isn't the simplest solution just for you to be out of the class?
Certainly, there was the ability to opt out, but
are you the only one who doesn't have a release value that would persuade you to give up some of your claim? If you're the only one, why don't you have your own negotiation?
This court and the
GM... Don't say this court. Answer my question.
The reason that we believe that we should pursue our claims in the aggregate is because our claims are more likely to be successful if prosecuted in the aggregate in front of a jury.
Why?
That's a reason to opt out. That's not a reason to object to a settlement. If you want a jury trial, the only way in the world to get it is to opt out.
Your Honor, we're entitled to a jury trial as a class action.
Only if you opt out, because this class action has been settled. If you don't like a settlement, you obviously don't get a jury trial on a settlement. That's what a settlement is. If you don't like it, you opt out.
If the rule is that someone who has to opt out, who has the resources to do so, then the incentive is on class plaintiffs to discriminate against a subgroup of companies. It is a license, then, to promote...
I'm now completely lost. The dynamic of the negotiation is that the threat to opt out is very serious to everybody else because it breaks up the global nature of the settlement. And if you therefore make a credible threat to opt out, you're treated better in the settlement. But if you commit not to opt out, well, obviously you won't be treated better in the settlement.
You are correct, Your Honor. We won't be treated better in the settlement. In fact, we were discriminated against in the settlement because...
Right, and the way to prevent that is to make a credible threat to opt out.
Your Honor, if the only option is to threaten to opt out and then opt out if your actions aren't satisfied, then what you're doing is establishing a rule that promotes discrimination in settlements against a subclass of the class members, and also inevitably
opt out will prevent discrimination.
The threat to opt out did not prevent discrimination in this case. And, Your Honor, so what we have here is a situation where the people who negotiated this settlement were conflicted. They participated in a reverse auction.
The opt-out has expired, I take it.
It has certainly expired. We had the option to opt out in October of 2011, Your Honor.
Why do you have any interest in a class action? I don't understand. You're a big company. This is not like lawyers deciding they can make a big fee if they have a big class action. You have a quarrel with AIG, which is different from the quarrel of the other companies. Why aren't you just pursuing them by yourself? What got you involved in a class action?
For the same reason that Safeco brought the class action in the first instance, Your Honor.
Why?
Because it believed then, as it does today, in 2009 when it initiated the action, that its claims were most likely to succeed if it was a class action against...
Why? I don't understand.
Because, Your Honor, in front of a jury...
Class actions are for little people, right? What do you need a class action?
Class actions, in this case...
There are a lot of small insurance companies.
There are.
But you're huge, so... And you have this unique claim, counterclaims with AIG. It seems to me the logical thing would be for you to have pursued this by yourself.
Right? Obviously, Your Honor, we believed that our rights were best protected as part of the aggregate. In addition, Your Honor...
Why?
Because, again, we believe that it is easier to prove a fraud in a RICO case when you're part of...
Or is the point rather that a huge class action will frighten AIG into settling, whereas if you just sue them, maybe they'll fight it out in court with you?
I think that nothing frightens AIG, Your Honor, and I think that...
Then I don't understand your interest in bringing this as a class action.
Your Honor, we made a decision in 2009 that...
But I don't get it.
Your Honor, we made the decision for believing, as we do then, and believing as trial lawyers, that this would be an easier
case. Look, there's no trial in cases like this. Come on. They're too big. They're always settled.
They're not.
That's why I say it must be that you thought you could frighten AIG with a, 1,300 insurance company class action.
There are actually, I think, 580 who get an allocation in this case,
Your
Honor.
580.
And about 280 of those members receive less than $50,000. And so there is both a selfish interest in believing that our claims are best pursued as a class action. There's also the benefit to the class. That is, if we stay in and raise objections that are well taken, either we're right or wrong on our objections, either that we are right that...
No, but what you want is more money.
Of course we want more money.
You're not working for the class. You want more money for yourself.
Well, as putative class representatives, Safeco is working for the class as well as for itself. And the benefit...
But the other class members are going to get less if you prevail.
If we prevail, Your Honor, they should get more than the allocation that they're currently getting, because it will be more than...
Well, if you get more, they get less.
It would be an injustice for us to give up our non-pool claims for a big fat zero. In effect, there was no reason to wrap Liberty's non-pool claims into this settlement agreement, this class settlement agreement. AIG insisted on it. And then, as a result, the allocation...
So you want to have two lawsuits?
We did have a separate Liberty lawsuit and a separate class action by Safeco. And the Liberty lawsuit had to be brought as a separate lawsuit because it involved multiple contracts and regulatory schemes whereas the NWCRP had a single contract governing multiple states. And so it would have been a problem with the predominance for Liberty to try and bring the non-pool claims as a class action. That's why there is a separate action for that, Your Honor. Bottom line is, there are conflicts. There was collusion here, as represented by the July 29th letter. In addition to that, there was error committed by the district court when it denied the Safeco's motion to strike opinion evidence, and then the court relied on it without holding a Daubert hearing that had been requested, in violation of this court's holdings in both American Honda and Messner. In this instance, the court at A31 and 32 relied on opinion evidence to conclude that there was no collusion, which was an essential element of its decision certifying the class. It only did that because it was relying on expert evidence that we had moved to strike and demanded or requested a Daubert hearing. And so for that reason, there is a procedural error here that is inconsistent with this court's jurisprudence. And so for each of those reasons, we request that the court reverse the district court's judgment approving the settlement, find that the settlement class plaintiffs are inadequate, and that their counsel is also inadequate. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Rubin. Mr. Klein.
May it please the court. 1 year ago today, perhaps coincidentally, the district court held a 5-hour final fairness hearing. It was the 13th of what turned out to be 14 hearings held by the district court in 2011. Many of those hearings were 2 hours long. Two of them were 5 hours long. Everything that could have been said was said and submitted to the district court, who took a very careful interest in this case that the district judge had been presiding.
Why isn't Liberty right that that this settlement doesn't reflect the fact that it doesn't derive benefit from a release because of its claim against AIG?
Liberty is not right, Your Honor, because it derives the same value as every other member of the class. The release is exactly the same. Liberty's flaw in their argument is that they had unique claims. They did not. Their claims were the same claims that every other class member had, but all of the other class members chose not to bring because those so-called non-class claims were valueless. The pool encompasses 40 states that have been part of the national pool since 1970 at one point or another. So we have actually 11 jurisdictions, including the District of Columbia, which is part of the pool, 11 jurisdictions that were
but
these
Liberty
non-pool
has
claims.
Non-pool claims against AIG. And its argument, as I understand, is that because of these claims, it is unwilling and should not be forced to take a discount on its recovery from AIG because it's being sued by AIG. It is being sued by AIG, but on the other hand, rather than a release, rather than, you know, paying for a release, it's got its non-pool claims against AIG, and that puts it in a different position from the other insurance companies.
That is its contention.
Well, what's wrong with that argument?
It's erroneous because Liberty doesn't have unique claims. These were exactly the same claims.
I thought a lot of the other companies, their claims were barred by the statute of limitations.
According to Mr. Rubin, but never according to any court, the citation in the record is Mr. Rubin on March 10th of 2011 arguing to Judge Gettleman that the other companies' so-called non-pool claims were barred by the statute of limitations. That was never adjudicated by anyone.
Well, have the other companies sued?
They have not. And the reason they have not...
Can they? Are they barred by the statute?
I don't believe they're barred at all, Your Honor. We have contract claims, fraud claims, we have accounting claims, RICO claims. If those other companies thought there was value, to the so-called non-pool claims, they would have brought them. And look at Travelers and compare them to Liberty under the plan of allocation. Liberty's getting $99 million. Travelers is getting $98 million. All of these companies, CNA, an absent class member, is getting 50. All of these companies did business all over the country. And they had the option, if they thought these were valuable claims, to bring them. But no company other than Liberty thought there was value. So we disagreed with them. We said there's no value. We're
but
giving
Liberty,
a release.
Liberty has sued, right?
Liberty has sued.
And it has not encountered a statute of limitations problem.
Well, it hasn't been adjudicated. That's correct.
It hasn't encountered one yet.
That's correct.
Now, these other companies haven't sued.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you say there's no statute of limitations problem?
I don't believe there's a statute of limitations
problem. Why not? What is the statute of limitations?
Well, it differs depending upon whether it's fraud, contract,
redo. Well, how do you know there's no statute of limitations problem?
One of the issues, Your Honor, is an accounting issue. There's almost
never...
Answer
my question. How do you know there is no statute of limitations problem?
There's no statute of limitations issue on an accounting claim, Your
Honor.
Yes,
but there are other claims.
Yes.
Now, none of Liberty's claims apparently are barred by the statute of limitations.
That is Liberty's contention. It has never been adjudicated by anybody.
Well, if it's never been adjudicated, how do we know that it doesn't have, that it isn't differently situated from...
Well, here's
companies.
How we know, Your Honor, because the other companies, sophisticated, regulated, inside counsel, outside counsel, had an opportunity to evaluate those potential claims, and they made a different judgment than Liberty did. They thought the claims were valueless. Liberty thought they were valuable. Then what Liberty should have done to answer questions that both Judge Posner and Chief Judge Easterbrook have put this morning to Mr. Rubin, what Liberty should have done is it should have made a decision to opt out and pursue those claims. Because, interestingly enough, it wasn't only the non-pool claims that Liberty ultimately thought it was not getting value for. Liberty contended that they should not have been getting $99 million in the class settlement. They should have been getting $700 million. What economically rational choice was there for Liberty to decide to give up claims that they said were worth $700 million and the opportunity to pursue their non-pool claims, which we thought were valueless, and instead stay in the class and try to force this class to continue to litigate and, in the bargain, to pay for it? Because the national pool paid $47 million as of January of 2011, much more since then, and what Liberty was presented with this settlement was a better option the day after the settlement than the day before. And here's why. The day before, Liberty had rejected AIG's settlement of $450. They said it was too low. Their only option was to litigate. The day after, the 1,300 companies represented by the seven, who I represent and have been certified, the day afterwards, Liberty had two options. It could have, A, continued to litigate with AIG, as they have been doing for years. They spent $20 million on that effort. Or, B, they could have elected to join the class. So their options were enhanced by the settlement. They were not crammed down. They were not forced into something that they didn't have an option to go a different direction. But what they want, to answer your question right out of the box, Judge Posner, what does Liberty want? It wants to cram down continued litigation on a class of 1,300 that have settled and have achieved industry peace and peace within the pool and peace with the regulatory community, and they don't want to pay for more litigation. That's what the 1,300 companies have elected to do. Liberty had an opportunity to go in the other direction. They elected not to go there for reasons that none of us have been able to understand.
When did their opportunity to opt out?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
When did their opportunity to opt out end?
October 3rd of 2011. The preliminary ruling on fairness and certification was July 26th. Then there was an August 5th order that followed. And then after that, notice went out. Everybody expected Liberty, actually, to opt out. And to go to Chief Judge Easterbrook's point, Your Honor, this is actually a different kind of a settlement, because you're quite right that in most circumstances, the ability to opt out may enhance an objector's ability to negotiate. But here, everybody contemplated that Liberty would opt out. So the term sheet and the settlement agreement provided that if Liberty and its companies opted out, it was not an event of breakup. Instead, the $450 million settlement would be $351. Liberty would continue to litigate against AIG for years on end, and the companies that wanted to settle would have settled. So Liberty lost the leverage to exact something more out of the class action settlement, but also elected to follow an irrationally economic, an economically irrational path. And the argument that they're doing this for the class doesn't want Liberty to protect it. The class has made a decision, and these are not mom and pops. These are not consumers.
It's very hard for 1,300 people to make a decision, but it is possible for the pool board to make a decision. And I do note that there's no protest here from the pool board.
Not at all. The pool board, actually, Your Honor, is supporting this. As Your Honor knows from the record.
And which takes me back to my initial question, which is the pool agreement says the decisions of the pool board are final and conclusive. Maybe that should be true with respect to approval of the class settlement. Maybe the pool board's approval is all that's needed here.
Well, Liberty contested that throughout and threatened to sue the pool board, actually, Your Honor, on September 14th. If the pool
agreement says final and conclusive, I understand, even though arbitration is also final and conclusive, people can sue, but usually that just leads to an award of sanctions.
What the pool board did, Your Honor, was when the Spitzer investigation opened in 2005, the pool board commenced its own investigation to understand what had happened because AIG appeared to have cheated all of the rest of the pool companies. That investigation, which ultimately was coordinated with the examiner for the 51 jurisdictions, did not produce a settlement. The pool board, representing the 1,300 companies, was not able to effectuate a settlement with AIG, and litigation was filed in 2007. The pool board continued to litigate until Judge Gettleman's standing ruling, which was a termination, but it was an interlocutory order. It was never a 54B final determination, so this court was never presented with that issue. But the class action was a backup, which everybody recognized would be the backup in case the pool board did not have standing to pursue on behalf of the whole. But the pool board has continued to support the litigation with AIG and then ultimately the resolution with AIG, and the pool, now called the National Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association, formerly called the pool, filed its own brief in this court because it was a litigant. It signed the settlement agreement. It was being sued by AIG for an accounting, and it has been part and support of this. The pool board itself has been authorizing the payment of counsel fees for all the companies because it is in the inherent interest of this pool, and this goes to your point, Chief Judge Easterbrook, to bring a systemic resolution to this problem because they're all a pool. So if one company has more of a responsibility, another company has less. You cannot settle this outside the context of a systemic collective action. Ultimately, it became the class action in order to make this work. Now, that's what the pool has been doing, and the seven settlement class plaintiffs were on the pool board. They took the leadership position at the point when it became clear that Liberty and AIG and the pool could not reach a settlement. The pool board even tried to help Liberty with AIG. There's a September 21st letter from counsel for the pool board back to AIG, to the examiner, actually, who is in the middle of every one of these negotiations, the letters and the meetings on behalf of the 51 regulators. And that letter said, we will settle not for 450 AIG, we'll settle for 515. And this is endorsed by Liberty. And yet AIG stuck at 450. So the pool board was faced with a fish or cut date decision, an accept or reject. because for months AIG had gone up from initially $147 million to $375 million. They got to $450. They never put another dollar on the table, and they were not going to do so. So the pool board, in trying to solve this problem for the 1,300 companies, had to decide, is this adequate? Is this sufficient? It was less than the pool board wanted. Counsel to the pool board had been doing analyses for 13 months, and they came up with a discounted value very much in the Sinfuel Reynolds mode of analysis, and they said that a reasonable settlement, discounting for all of the reasons one does, should be somewhere between $335 million and $540 million, and the $450 million was less than they wanted. It was as much as they could get. And if it had been the cut bait option instead of the fish option, they would have gone back to three more years of litigation, tremendous cost that was running $2 million a month, and the class was paying for it. Liberty wants to force that result upon the class, to continue to pay for litigation when the class wants to settle. That's not a favor to the class. It's not protecting the class. And this company knew everything. They were involved in the negotiations. They led the negotiations for a period of time. Collusion is just a ridiculous word to apply on the facts of this case because Liberty was in the room. Safeco and Ohio Casualty attended settlement meetings. Everything was disclosed through the examiner, through letters, through meetings. So there was no collusion. There is no conflict. This is a fair and reasonable, adequate settlement, and the district judge did a superlative job of listening to everybody respectfully, taking all of the issues into account, and determining that this was fair, reasonable, and adequate. It met everything under Rule 23A4 and all the other aspects of it, Rule 23E. And Judge Gettleman said it at a number of points to Liberty, why don't you go your own way? You are valuing this differently. That's fine. You're not being forced into this settlement. Opt out. Let the companies that have made a different business judgment, and they know what they're doing, this is their business, let them choose to settle. Why try to force them into more litigation? And Liberty was never, ever to this day, able to answer that question because we believe that they wanted to use the class action to leverage themselves, benefit themselves to a better position. That was their right to litigate against AIG separately, but it's not their right to prevent the class members from achieving a settlement. When they knew what they were doing, they did it after full disclosure. My time is up. I'm happy to answer any further questions from the panel.
Doesn't look like it. Thank you, Mr. Klein. Mr. Novak.
May it please the Court, I'd like to start off by addressing Judge Posner's question about the non-pool claim argument that Liberty had made. Actually, Your Honor, their argument is not so much that those claims were released. It was, they say, released without consideration. That's the entire premise of their argument. If that premise is wrong, their argument doesn't even exist. I'm here to say to Your Honor, that premise is wrong. They did receive consideration for the non-pool claims. They received $99 million. They received a release of underreporting claims that had been asserted against them, and that is adequate consideration. The consideration was for a release, the payment was for a release of all underreporting claims wherever and whenever, all 50 states, the District of Columbia, going back to time immemorial, without exception. AIG made it clear it was only going to pay $450 million if it got that full release. That's in the letter of September 27, 2010, where the writer...
Well, Liberty's argument is that because it had this non-pool, these non-pool claims against AIG, for it to give up a release would... it was entitled to greater consideration.
Well, I'm taking umbrage with that because they got consideration. The consideration
was
not earmarked.
The question is how much, right?
Well, they got the consideration.
How much? How much did they get?
They got $99 million.
Well, that's not all the consideration, right?
Well, they also got a release. They got $99 million and a release of the claims AIG had against Liberty.
Yes, I know, but what if they think their claims against AIG are worth more than AIG's claims against them?
Well, they do, and that's why they objected and why they should have opted out. They didn't. But just because they object and say,
well,
I think
your only
I'm not
argument, isn't it, that they should have opted out?
That's an argument we made.
I mean, they're certainly entitled to argue that the settlement is inadequate for them because they have these really valuable claims against AIG that they're giving up.
Well, they just
disagree.
Well, they're disagreeing with the dollar amount of the settlement. But not for any reason special.
Well, they're
special
disagreeing with their share. I don't think they care about the overall amount. They care about their share.
Well, and they had the right to opt out if they didn't like it.
That's all that you're, that's what your argument comes down to. They should have opted out, right?
Well, that's a major part of the argument. It's not our only argument, but I agree that that's a major part, and it's, I think, dispositive because they had their own claims going, including, by the way, their own pool claims. Counsel said that they only filed their own case because of the non-pool claims. That's not so. They have They have all of their pool claims in there. They've spent money. Truthfully, everybody expected them to opt out. The settlement agreement still would have gone forward. AIG would have kept back $99 million. But they did get consideration, and the Seventh Circuit has held in the Williams case in 1998, Williams versus GE, that a release of a class action typically has a general release and subsumes even non-class claims. And it's okay to do that if the non-class claims are closely enough related to the class claims to be covered by that release. And that's what we've got here. These claims are the same claims. They happen to be in a different state. It's the same alleged misconduct. It's the same legal theories. It's the same factual theories. The courts across the country allow, even if there's no separate consideration for the non-class claims, for the class release, in the words of that Williams case, it's just common usage to have a general release. We all know that. You don't settle and say, we're settling, but okay, you can sue me. That's all that happened here, and there was no segregation of that $99 million for pool versus non-pool. And the letter said, guys, understand, everybody has the same non-pool claims. And this settlement is deemed to take care of that, and that's why we're paying $450 million for that. Now, Your Honors, we're here, obviously, is this settlement fair? That's the issue. I want to focus on the balance of equities. That goes into the question of fairness. The balance of equities here is completely one-sided in favor of settlement. On the one hand, what do we have? We have a $450 million settlement, $450 million at stake. That was a settlement that was brokered and supported by a
hardly sufficient in this building. Remember, this is the Dirksen Courthouse, and Everett Dirksen's most famous statement is, a billion here, a billion there, sooner or later we're talking about real money.
I remember reading about that comment, and I think we've got real money here. And what we do know, Your Honor, is that 1,300 members of this class who were fully informed, they were kept advised of the proceedings regularly by pool counsel, they approve this settlement. They're okay with the settlement. Only one doesn't agree with the settlement. And it's a settlement that has the support of the commissioners of all 50 insurance commissioners of all 50 states and the District of Columbia. That's it.
That's enough to make you think by itself there's something seriously wrong.
Well, that... I'm sorry you said it exactly that way, because I was going to point the court to the Prudential Insurance case where the Third Circuit said we are cognizant in upholding fairness of an insurance settlement. We're cognizant that the original framework of this settlement resulted from the efforts of the multi-state task force. Translated here, from the efforts of Mr. Leslie, the national examiner. And we were impressed. This is the Third Circuit. We were impressed by the seal of approval the settlement has received from the insurance regulators of each of the 50 states and the District of Columbia. That's what we've got here. It's a settlement that has the support of the board. Your Honor asked the question about, well, maybe the board should resolve it. The board has minutes. They're approved in the record.
But Liberty argues, and I didn't hear Mr. Klein a clear answer to this. Liberty argues that it has these very good claims against AIG, and therefore it shouldn't have had to take a discount in order to release those claims. It got no value from the release, and so it's being treated unfairly. It has this special status. It should get a larger. It should either the entire pot should be larger, or it should have a larger share. That's what it's arguing.
Judge, I have two responses.
So talking about global fairness, that doesn't really answer the question.
I have three answers to that, if you allow me. One is the $450 million. AIG said, here's $450 million. You know what we want for that? We want a release of pool claims, and we want a release of non-pool claims. That's the only way we will pay $450 million.
Well, that's their negotiating position. I mean, the only way they'll pay $450 million.
Well, AIG, Mr. Klein, was absolutely right. We drew a line in the sand that we never, ever backed off of. And that line in the sand was $450, and the other line in the sand was, and we must get a release of everything, not a partial release, everything. And the second answer is everybody in this class.
You can't sell a member of the class down the river by saying that, well, I'm sorry, you really ought to get a lot more, but that's going to be impossible, right? You have to consider not just what AIG says, but, you know, whether Liberty really has some very distinct claim, much stronger claim than any of the other insurance companies.
Judge, the non-pool claims were held by every pool member alike. Every pool member had the same non-pool claims.
That doesn't mean it's the same. Not the same amount.
Well, the same proportion as the pool claims. And there's a lot of Liberty had 22% of the pool claims, and if you use that as a proxy, because I'm telling you it's the same conduct nationwide, that would mean 22% of the non-pool claims. That means there's 78% of those non-pool claims that Liberty didn't have.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Anything further, Mr. Rubin?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. In respect to the non-pool claims, the record at Joint Appendix 4837 and 38 demonstrates that the $99 million that Liberty has allocated is only for its pool claims. That $99 million gives Liberty zero for its non-pool claims. Secondly, the evidence in the record demonstrates that Liberty's non-pool claims were worth tens of millions of dollars, and in fact, the district court held at Joint Appendix 4866, that the evidence of Liberty, the value of Liberty's non-pool claims was one-sided.
So if we were to reverse, what would you see as the... So what the other side is saying is, well, what do you want to do? Everybody else, you know, 1,299, they all want to settle, and you want to keep litigating this against AIG and, you know, have an adversary proceeding and so on. Is that what lies ahead?
I think, Your Honor, both an adversary proceeding by Liberty for its non-pool claims and appropriately an adversary proceeding, and I agree with it, most of these cases end up settling. But the settlement for the class, for the Safeco, the putative class action, should be on terms that don't involve conflicts of interest.
I'm asking you, what comes next?
What comes next is a remand where the Safeco case proceeds towards class certification and where the Liberty non-pool claims proceed independently. And the judge will then decide for trial management issues how to stage those proceedings. Remember, those are separate cases. They were never consolidated for trial. And so the Liberty non-pool claims may go to trial separately and should go to trial separately.
So the settlement is rescinded?
Settlement is rescinded.
And you keep on as the class representative?
Safeco keeps on as the class.
Yeah, but it's all the same.
As a class representative prosecuting the claims so that...
No one else in the class wants this.
This court once held in the Mars case that
Don't give me cases. Nobody else wants it, right?
I think when the notice goes
out... Does anybody else in the class want to litigate?
I think no one knows, Your Honor.
No one knows?
That's correct. Just because people haven't objected...
No one raised a voice other than Liberty and its subsidiaries, and the pool's board, which is supposed to be able to make a final decision, signed off. What does one need?
The pool board is made up of companies that are
getting... You may or may not like the pool board, but you are a party to an agreement that says that the pool board can make a final and conclusive decision.
And
you don't like it, but that's too bad.
And the district court found that there was no Article III standing on the part of the pool board to sue.
I don't care. The agreement says the pool board can make a final decision. You're spending a lot of your energy protesting the board's decision. You think it made a bad decision. But the document to which you were a party says it's a final decision. That still leaves you the option to opt out and pursue go your own way. But I don't see how you can say we should second guess what the pool board did.
If the pool board lacks standing to bring an Article III suit, it lacks standing to settle. It doesn't have the authority. The court below found that there had not been a delegation of the property rights.
I don't think that's the point. The point is that the pool board is representative of the insurers, and the insurers have not objected to the settlement at all, and the pool board likes it. So you want to drag 1,299 other insurance companies into a litigation when you could have opted out and, pursued your own suit.
You certainly could have opted out, Your Honor, but then the alternative would have been no one to voice what was a settlement that was created by conflicted parties that was collusion.
There wouldn't have been a conflict if you had opted out.
No, the pool board would still have been conflicted because what was happening...
I think we have your position, counsel. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement.